From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of September 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in the program, Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, will help us take up the cash grain market. Steve Hilberg will be here to look at the agricultural weather forecast. He's with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. And as we make our way into the second half hour, we call that the farming world, and it's available on some of these radio stations and always online at willag.org. We'll hear today from gubernatorial candidate on the Republican side. His name is Illinois State Senator Bill Brady. Yesterday, we heard from sitting Governor Pat Quinn. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Your Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day higher in the nearby September wheat. That's 27.5 up, 7.08 1/4 the settlement price. December at 7.41 1/4, 27.5 higher. And July wheat for the soft red at $7.29 1/2 up 14.5 cents. Hard red in Kansas City, 7.43 1/2, a 25.5 cent gain. From the corn pit nearby September contract, $4.49 3/4, up 16 3/4. December 4.64 1/2, 17 higher. The March at 4.77 3/4. It finished 17 cents higher, and the May futures in the corn pit up 15 1/4 at $4.82 1/2. December at $4.57 1/2 for next year, up 5 3/4. September beans, $10.29 3/4, up 22 1/4. November, $10.35, up 26 for the harvest month. January beans at $10.43 3/4, up 25 1/4. And the March contract at $10.49, up 24 cents. July, $10.59, up 21 1/2. Bean meal, September contract, $308.20, up $6. September bean oil at $40.32, up 66 cents on the day. Live cattle futures finished the October at $98.45. They were unchanged for the afternoon. December at $100.65, down 67 1/2. September feeders down 57 1/2 at $114.17 1/2. The October at 115 7 1/2 cents, down 42 1/2. And the October lean hogs at $77.20, up 77 1/2 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at the hour. October crude oil futures, $74.34 a barrel, down 68 cents. September ethanol at $1.96 9/10. That's up 1 6/10. Natural gas at $3.91 9/10, 16 8/10 higher. And the heating oil or diesel fuel down a penny and a tenth at $2.05 1/10. September gold futures at $1,249.20, down $2.30 on their settlement price for the afternoon. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now just about 98 points higher at 10,418. The U.S. dollar at 82.09 is down 0.30. And the CRB index for the day at 272.77 is up 1.62 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. They say this afternoon in the Urbana-Champaign area should be sunny, and it is. A high near 74, 73 degrees outside the studios now. Breezy west-northwest winds around 22 miles an hour, with gust as high as 32 this afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear skies, a low of 49 degrees. West-northwest winds between 9 and 16 miles an hour. They'll gust up to 21. Saturday, skies should be sunny, a high near 71. Northwest winds between 8 and 17, gusting to 24. And then Saturday night, mostly clear, a low around 48 degrees. West-northwest winds at 5 to 7 miles an hour. They'll turn to the south-southwest, and by Sunday, skies will be sunny with a high near 80 degrees, with south winds between 3 and 10 miles an hour. The extended forecast says Sunday night should be mostly clear with a low of 56. Labor Day, it'll be sunny with a high of 86. And Monday night, a low of 62 with mostly clear skies. We'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast and the Labor Day weekend when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with Steve Hilberg.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Bob Baisdiffer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets, as always, Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike. You're smiling today, I bet, aren't you?
I'm very happy for the producers, Todd, because one nice thing about this crop year that we don't get very often, it seems like to me, is that at least if the yields are going down, we're seeing the prices going up, and that's nice to see because oftentimes we deal with markets that don't really make much sense on the farm, but this harvest it seems like we are. So it is a nice feeling to have the markets go up, as even if the yields are starting to go down on the farm this fall.
Tell me why you think yields are going down.
Well, I think most of it is the holes. I think the holes in the field seem to be the biggest issue that maybe the trade got caught behind on in terms of estimating, overestimating the numbers as far as early in the season. The denitrification that it goes and coordinates with the and is compensating or is complementary with these holes out there. It seems like the holes cut our yields because of the drowned out spots, plus the holes, and around those areas also we got denitrification. So I think those are the two biggest things out there.
Next week on Friday, USDA will release its next set of numbers predicting crop production size and average yields nationally. What do you think?
I think we'll probably try and go higher into the first couple days after the holiday, because between the outside market seeing strong pickup in fund interest, extremely strong fund buying in the corn today, we've got reports of 25,000 to 30,000 contracts of corn bought, just futures alone by funds. Between that and the new wheat fundamentals coming out of Russia, I think we'll come back after the holiday and try and push the prices even higher. But I tell you, Todd, I think we're getting the price levels now that we want to go ahead and book some more bushels. I'll start with probably beans and then move into corn by the time we get to Friday morning's report. I was doing some figuring, and this is what I think producers maybe would want to do over the long weekend, is if you normally get 210 bushel yield and a 350 cash price, that's right around $735 bucks an acre. If that yield drops down to 180 bushels, you need about a 426 cash price, 425 cash price, to get you over that $735 an acre. And that's exactly what you're getting based upon the websites in Champaign at like the Andersons for fall delivery. So even if you're dealing with 30 bushel less yields, the prices have come up enough compared to what we normally sell at harvest at that this is probably a good place to look at. And I think the other thing goes back to the fund length. We're extremely long in the funds, and we've got extremely overbought conditions on the technicals.
You know, go back to something you mentioned, and I heard this earlier in the day, but production day is for me Friday afternoon and morning, so I'm usually busy with my Illinois Extension side. Russia came out with an announcement that they would extend their export ban. Is that right on wheat?
Yeah, it was interesting because yesterday I got a call from a Newswire contact, and he said, do you want to make a comment on Vladimir Putin saying it's going to be a whole other year before they lift their export ban? I said, no way. I said, this is something that is just very, very hard to envision, and I really don't know if we can trust what he says right now. Well, last night, early this morning, that's exactly what the official agency put out over in Russia, that they were going to stay out of the export business in, at least until late 2011, and I think that really shook the markets. In fact, you could say it did shake the markets when you looked at the European markets. Both Germany and France's markets stayed very, very strong all the way through their closes. So this really does put a different dynamic on the 2011 crop. It puts a different dynamic on the acreage, fighting for acreage. It puts a different dynamic on the fertilizer prices. I was one of those people that thought, look, lock in your potash here, but let your fertilizer prices other than that run until at least the end of September. See if we can't get a pullback in the grains, pullback in the energies, pullback in the stocks. Maybe some of the speculators are driving these nitrogen prices higher. I'm going to still stick with that game plan, Todd, but if we don't get a pullback by the end of September in the nitrogen because of this new wheat information and us being really the only guy on the block or one of three guys on the block for wheat, we're going to see probably an acreage battle, and that means the nitrogen prices really don't have to fall back too much.
Okay, so what's the likelihood, and here's just another twist on it, that USDA doesn't lower the yield next week. Does this give enough of a push to keep the market higher?
I don't think so. If we go higher Tuesday and Wednesday when we come back from the holiday and USDA comes out with no changes, I think the market will try and fade the USDA corn number, but I think the beans will be taken at face value, and I think the wheat will be probably up enough and overbought enough that if the wheat and the beans correct and fall, I think the corn will fall with them. Again, it goes back to we've got the daily charts, the weekly charts, and the monthly charts, and now very overbought on the oscillators, and we've got the funds extremely, extremely long. And, you know, I'll throw one other thing in here because I know we don't have a lot of time, but the demand is starting to buckle. And what I saw today was kind of the tipping point because I saw in the Wall Street Journal that Asian countries are coming in to try and cause the dollar to find a bottom and to get their currencies to go down because their currencies have been going too fast to the upside. It's been curbing their exports. We've also got the United Nations, FAO, coming out with an emergency meeting about the issues with the wheat market and Mozambique, who's had some food riots and people have been killed over there. The FAO's getting the attention again, too. So it smells a lot like 07, 08 again. We're starting to get to the price levels where the pressure's on again on the demand side, and I think that needs to be thought about as we go higher here next week.
Mike, thanks so much.
Thanks. Have a nice holiday, Todd.
Hey, you too, Mike. Mike Suzzolo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Friday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In today's agricultural news, consumer perspectives of pork and pork production are the central focus of the National Pork Board's proposed $46 million budget for 2011. More than 50 pork producers will gather in Des Moines, Iowa next week to help guide the investment of pork checkoff dollars into consumer information, research, and producer education programs. In addition, the board reports two task force will present recommendations on enhancing producer input into the board's programming decisions and strengthening the state pork producer organizations. Among the budget requests are major proposals to create new excitement for pork in the consumer marketplace and to help consumers better understand and appreciate modern agriculture. Well, the U.S. Grains Council director in Latin America, Kurt Schultz, traveled to Colombia last week, where he found that a lack of progress in the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement is continuing to have some impact on U.S. corn, soybean, and wheat producers. As an example, Colombia traditionally purchases about 3 million metric tons of yellow corn annually. However, since 2009, Colombia has been gradually switching its corn imports to South American origins at the expense of U.S. producers. The United States, which has had an FTA agreement negotiated since 2006, has been unable to get the agreement before the U.S. Congress for a vote. Well, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and Energy Secretary Stephen Chu have announced research awards under a joint DOE-USDA program aimed at improving and accelerating genetic breeding programs to create plants better suited for bioenergy production. The $8.9 million in grants will focus on fundamental investigations of biomass genomics. By the way, the University of Illinois has the second largest project in the group of projects under this grant. And finally today from Washington, the Department of Agriculture says it has analysts training an eye towards Russia, keeping track of drought as it continues.
That affected the crop and devastated the spring crops, particularly in Russia, adjoining Kazakhstan and the eastern parts of Ukraine.
That's USDA grains analyst Jerry Norton, who says some areas of Russia did not face the same challenge and had decent growing weather for grains.
Some of the crop in the far eastern parts of the country, and particularly in Siberia, received pretty adequate rainfall all through the year, and they've not suffered from the very high temperatures that devastated the crop in the areas of certainly the Volga and parts of the central and southern districts. So, you know, that's the other counter factor here that we don't know and won't know for some time, because the Siberian crop is harvested fairly late, and winter comes very early to Siberia, and frequently we can have harvest losses associated with early snows, but if you don't have those, they're unlined to have a very good crop at that part of the country.
In August, USDA experts projected a 45 million ton Russian wheat crop, a 27% decline from a year ago.
The big story, I guess, going forward is to see, you know, from the harvest results that we're getting in now and starting to get some yield indications from some of these areas that were most hurt, to see how bad those yields will have been impacted and if the areas have been impacted, you know, lost to the drought and damage. So we're kind of right now saying, you know, reassessing that situation, and we'll be releasing something here on the 10th.
USDA releases the next World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates next Friday, September the 10th. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Be sure to visit our website and listen to Commodity Week. It'll be there by about 6 o'clock this evening. We record at 4:30. Our guest this week, Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading out of Lafayette, Indiana. Now up next, you know the price of corn has rallied through the summer months despite USDA projections for a record-sized crop. As you'll hear, an ag economist at Illinois is wondering aloud if the recent part of the rally has had as much to do with the weather in August as it does with growing demand for the crop. This summer was one of the warmest and wettest on record in Illinois. That's based on preliminary data collected by the Illinois State Water Survey. The statewide average temperature for the summer, June to August, in Illinois was 76.4 degrees. That's 2.7 degrees above normal and the seventh warmest summer on record. The average rainfall for the summer in Illinois was 16.7 inches. 5.2 inches above normal, ranking as the sixth wettest summer on record. Statewide records extend back to 1895. Well, the weather in the month of August was warmer than normal, 76.8 degrees, 3.2 degrees above average. It places the month as the 13th warmest August on record. August was on track to be even warmer, but a late month cool spell knocked it down a few notches in the ranking. August rainfall was close to normal, reports the Illinois State climatologist, with a statewide average of 3.4 inches, just 0.3 inches below normal. However, significant areas in east central and southern Illinois received less than half that amount. For example, Champaign, where the University of Illinois is located, and so is ag economist Daryl Good, reported 1.64 inches for the month. August was tough on the corn crop in parts of Illinois, and early yields have been described as, well, disappointing. It's something Daryl Good says producers should be aware of, but not necessarily act upon.
The more recent strength in corn prices is related to concerns that the U.S. average yield may fall short of the USDA's August 12 forecast of 165 bushels. Very early yield reports in the Midwest have been described as disappointing. It is a little dangerous to base expectations on early results. In addition, it is yield relative to the USDA forecast, not relative to a third-party expectation, that is important. With year-ending stocks already projected to be less than 10% of projected consumption, a lower average yield would point to very tight stocks. Under the strong demand scenario currently being experienced, higher prices would be required to force a substantial reduction in consumption.
Given that, Good reminds corn farmers that December futures in Chicago had reached their highest levels the last week of August since early January. He says those $4.50 highs may provide heavy resistance unless USDA confirms prospects for a smaller corn crop in its September 10 crop production report. He has this marketing advice.
The current price of December futures is well above the price guarantee for revenue insurance products, so that pricing a portion of expected production is warranted. For those with on-farm storage, the current price structure favors selling corn for later delivery. On August 27, the average bid for harvest delivery in central Illinois, for example, was 68 cents under July 2011 futures. That basis is likely to strengthen to about 20 under by next spring, offering a return of 48 cents per bushel for storing corn for 9 months. At 6% interest, the interest cost of storing $4 corn for 9 months is 18 cents per bushel, leaving 30 cents to cover storage costs.
If you'd like to read more from Illinois' Daryl Good, that's easily accomplished. Visit the Farm Doc website. The address is www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us from the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois, is the manager. His name, Bruce Bostard. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Well, let's start with the Informa numbers, because I suspect many a producer said, hey, wait a second, did they really say that? They came out with numbers, and they're still saying that the crop is pretty good sized. Remember, USDA at 165. Informa says the next time USDA comes out, it'll be a 164.8. Anybody believe them in your area?
Well, I don't think so, but I think Informa also put a qualifier on that, saying this is what they think the next USDA report will be, but they think the final number will end up below that.
Yeah.
So I think there's an asterisk on that one.
Indeed, there is, in fact, an asterisk on that one. So everybody thinks they'll have to deal with the USDA number, and I guess they're not convinced USDA will come down in the September report, or maybe they're just hedging their bets. I'm not sure which is the case. Let's talk about cash grain market in your area at this point. First, what have you been hearing from farmers about the corn they're shucking at this time and how good or bad it might be?
Kind of a mixed bag right now. It's been damaged. The dry weather in July and August definitely took a toll on things. I'm getting numbers all over the place, and we're early enough in it. I don't have many whole fields out yet, but it's like we thought. The yield monitors are running all over the place as they go across the field. Not what we're used to the last couple of years, but it would have been a pretty respectable number a few years ago.
Well, you don't sound convinced that you've got enough of a sample yet to really get a good idea what the corn crop's going to look like in the area.
I'm fighting with that. I'm trying to get a handle. I know I've reduced what my projected handle is going to be for this fall from what we have been the last couple of years, but I'm not sure how much it's going to be reduced. Is it going to be a 5% drop or a 15% drop? And I've got some locations where they're telling me they think they could be 20. So it's just spotty and all over the place. I'm hoping it's not that big.
Does it make it tough to put bids out?
It doesn't make it tough to put bids out, but it sure makes it hard to plan logistics and how many trains you need to have on track.
And how's the basis holding up for corn?
Corn is hanging in there fairly well. We're still at a 38 under at Paxton for new crop, so that is pretty much unchanged here over the last couple weeks. Beans, the nearby premium keeps sliding away. The new crop keeps hanging in there. You know, you don't have to be a 50-cent premium or 50-cent inverse for the nearby to get beans to move. If the market moves to where the processes are, you know, 10, 15 cents, it'll still tend to move some to market.
And your bids for the day are?
We are 427 on nearby corn and 1030 on nearby beans.
All right, thanks much. The trains are moving near New York.
Yes, they are.
And that is Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. Back with the weather in 2 minutes.
It's National Welsh Rarebit Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1752, people rioted in the streets, thinking that the British government had swiped 11 days of their lives when September 3rd became September 14th. Pope Gregory XIII dropped the Julian calendar and adopted the Gregorian calendar. By the way, some other countries, including Russia, did not adopt the new standard till the 20th century. In 1827, John E.W. Keeley, an American inventor, created quite a stir when he claimed that he had discovered a new physical force powered by good old H2O. He suggested he could produce what he called intermolecular vibrations of ether, from a single quart of water, enough fuel to move a 30-car train from Philadelphia to New York City. In 1875, Ferdinand Porsche was born. He was an Australian engineer who designed the VW Beetle in 1935. In 1883, Harold DeForest Arnold was born, an American physicist. His research led to the development of long-distance radio communication. He oversaw the first transcontinental demonstration of radio telephone in 1915. The signal went from New York City to Arlington, Virginia, then to San Francisco, and finally to Hawaii. Arnold later became the first director of research at Bell Telephone Labs. And in 1912, the first cannery opened in England. It was to supply food to the Royal Navy. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center joins us now. He's the director there to talk about the agricultural weather forecast for the state and the Midwest. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I read from the climatologist in a news release that it was a warm August and a fairly wet one. What can you tell us about it in the state?
Well, it was a very warm August. Temperatures during the month were running several degrees above average. The range was generally, about 2 to 3 degrees on average across the state. A little bit degree or so cooler west of the Illinois River, but pretty uniform, and not only across Illinois, but most of the central Midwest, a little bit warmer up across the northern part of the Midwest along the Great Lakes, but fairly uniform, not a record by any means, but a warm August. In terms of precipitation, precipitation was a little bit more variable. We saw a pretty good amount of rain, at least normal to above normal amounts, west of the Illinois River. The western Illinois generally had normal rainfall, little parts around the Quad Cities area were somewhat above that extended back into Iowa. But if you draw a line right down the middle of the state from north to south, the east side of the state was fairly dry, ranging from anywhere from 25% of normal rainfall to maybe 75% as you get toward the middle of the state. So it was sort of a two-phase split personality for a precip this past month. Here in this area, in Champaign County area, for example, we precip generally ranged about from 1.25 to maybe 1.75 inches for the month.
Under the category of, I suppose, better late than never, there was a nice rainfall over the last couple of days.
Oh, yeah. In fact, a lot of areas in the eastern half of the state got more rain in the last 2 days than they had all of August. Rainfall amounts were very generous. 2 inches was pretty common. Some of the higher amounts we saw were back through Sangamon County, were close to 3.5 inches in places over the two-day period. But generally across central Illinois, rainfall amounts were pretty healthy, a little bit less farther north and to the far south. But overall, we had some pretty good rainfall so far this week, and that certainly will help a lot in getting some moisture back into the ground.
The rainfall ushered in some cooler weather, and looks like it'll be here for a couple of days.
Yeah, this is really nice. I don't know about you, but I know I was getting tired of the high dew points this summer.
I was.
And so this is really welcome weather, and it's going to help promote some drying in the fields, especially with this wind. Even though there was some heavy rain yesterday, the wind will help dry things out. It looks like it will persist through the weekend. We'll start to warm up again late Sunday into Monday as this high moves east. We get another strong low-pressure system to our west that will kick the winds into a southerly direction. But another front should come through around late Monday or Tuesday, possibly accompanied by some showers and thunderstorms, and a turn to slightly cooler weather. But temperatures, I think, next week will be near normal.
Thanks so much, Steve.
All right, Todd. Have a good weekend.
You too. Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. It's funded in part by NOAA. Joins us on a Friday afternoon for the Closing Market Report. Stay with us for the farming world if you can. If you can't, you can always hear that at willag.org. And Commodity Week will be posted there by about 6 o'clock this evening, too. You have a good afternoon. This is the Farming World. I'm Todd Gleason. You know, last week, the Illinois Agriculture Association held its candidates forum on a farm outside of Bloomington. Well, this week, on our radio stations, we've been hearing excerpts and online or the web, the full speeches made by Republican gubernatorial candidate State Senator Bill Brady and Democrat candidate and current governor Pat Quinn. Yesterday, we heard Quinn's address to the Illinois Agriculture Association's legislative forum. Today, we'll hear from Bill Brady. Phil Nelson is the president of the Illinois Farm Bureau and makes the introduction.
Our next candidate, and we'd like to welcome to the Ag Roundtable Candidates Forum, is the Republican candidate for governor, Bill Brady. Mr. Brady was born and raised in the Bloomington area, where he currently lives. He has served in the Illinois Senate since 2002 and served in the Illinois House of Representatives from 1993 to 2001. Senator Brady is Republican spokesman for the Senate Insurance Committee and is a member of the Senate Energy Committee, the Senate Environment Committee, the Senate Pensions and the Investment Committee, and the Senate Revenue Committee. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome the Republican candidate for governor, Senator Bill Brady.
Well, good evening, Phil. Thank you very much. And to all of you, thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to be here. I hope you didn't have a difficult time finding it. This is actually obviously close to home, and I appreciate it being so close to home. It gave me a chance to visit with my family this afternoon for a change during the middle of the week. I want to thank you for all you do for our state and for what the Illinois Agricultural Association, as well as all the agribusinesses, stand for, and all the things you do to give back to your communities as well. As you know, I'm from Bloomington. I'm a graduate of Illinois Wesleyan University, where I studied economics, met my wife Nancy, and decided that we would marry and raise a family and build a business. We're in the real estate business throughout Central Illinois. So unlike a lot of people, I'm not a career politician. I'm still very active in that business. We build homes, we develop land, we market homes, we finance homes, and we provide title insurance and other ancillary businesses associated with that. I think it's important that we put people in government who understand the struggles that we in business go through. Certainly the struggles of a difficult economy in this day and age are something that we need to grapple with. As I've ventured around this state, there's a lot of people who've said to me, Bill, why would you want to be governor of Illinois? And as I shake my head and think about and ponder the best answer for that, though, as we're facing these difficult times, not just in government and business, I can't tell you or think of a time that I would rather be governor of this state than today. Because I can't think of a time where we have a greater opportunity to make a difference in the future of our state, in the lives of our families, in the lives of our children and grandchildren. I look at government like a business, like you probably do in your businesses. And when I look at the state of Illinois' government as a business, and I look at the balance sheet, I have to tell you, when you start with the liabilities, they're horrifying. Over $130 billion in unfunded liabilities. Over $70 billion of that in unfunded pension liabilities. Over $20 billion of that in unfunded bonded indebtedness. And over $4 or $5 billion in unpaid bills. Even the Democratic controller, the party of the governor, says that Illinois is in the worst fiscal condition in its history and the worst fiscal condition of any state in this nation. And I remind you that over half of those liabilities were incurred in the last 8 years of the Blagojevich-Quinn administration. And in fact, some of the deepest debt and deficits were created in just the last 15 months on a per annum basis within the Quinn administration. But in business, we can't focus just on liabilities. We have to look at the assets and the opportunities. And I have to tell you that I can't think of a state in this nation that has more opportunity than the state of Illinois. And it starts with your business. Our state's economy is rooted in the agricultural economy, rooted in our soil. It continues on to our infrastructure. You probably know this because your business depends on it more than any. We have more rail, river, road, and air right-of-way in the state per capita than almost any other state in the nation. Our energy resources are abound, from our wind to our oil and our coal. I don't know if you know this or not, but in measurement of energy, we have more coal resources in Illinois than Saudi Arabia does oil. We have great universities and colleges, wonderful healthcare institutions, great corporate partners. We're still the fifth largest state in the nation and the 18th largest economy in this world, as measured by government sector, including the United States of America and China. But yet the policies put in place have failed the people of Illinois. Over the last decade, we have lost over 700,000 jobs and 700,000 people by our estimate. In just the last 15 months, we've lost over 200,000 jobs. In the last reporting period, Illinois was one of 13 states in this nation that lost jobs. In fact, we were amongst the three worst states, losing over 20,000 jobs, while 37 other states grew their economy and created jobs. Now, why is it that with all we have to offer, we keep losing opportunities? Well, I laughingly say if higher taxes and higher fees and more regulation and more litigation and deficits and debt created jobs, we'd be the number one job-producing state in the nation. But we're not. So to me, the answer is simple. We have to stop the politicians who talk about raising taxes, killing jobs, and start talking about reducing the tax burden. We have to cut back on the regulation and the litigation. What do I mean by that? Well, you all know that every time Governor Quinn speaks, you know he's going to talk about raising your tax rates. We're just not sure if it's 33 or 67 or 100%. But that kills jobs, which is why I'm emphasizing reducing the tax burden, calling for $1 billion in tax cuts. Governor Blagojevich and Governor Quinn have imposed fees on businesses throughout this state that are far above the necessary levels to fund government services and are extracting precious resources from those businesses that could be better invested in those businesses. We have a double tax on gasoline in the state. Do you realize that we're one of the few states in the nation that imposes a sales tax on top of the motor fuel tax? We know what happens when that occurs? Well, if you're within 30 miles of a border and you need gasoline, you're likely to buy it in the neighboring state. And when you do that, you pay their motor fuel tax and not ours. But you're also likely to buy bread or beverages or cigarettes. And when you do that, you pay their sales taxes and not ours. You pay their property and their income taxes and not ours. And their economy gains and ours suffers, which is why we have to roll back that tax, making our products more competitive. Governors Blagojevich and Quinn saw fit to impose an estate tax penalty. Now, that hurts your industry, the family farm, probably as much as any. But we're one of the few states in the nation that penalizes families for living out their retirement years as an Illinois citizen. So what have they done? They've moved to more friendly retirement states. Now, the retiring baby boomers are one of the fastest economic growing segments of our economy, and we have failed to recognize that. I will repeal the estate tax penalty so that we can keep those retiring baby boomers. Because when we lose them, you know what else we lose? We lose their spending. Now, they want to live here. They lived here most of their life. They've raised their families here. They've developed their livelihood and their wealth. They don't want to move. They want to stay here, and they want to spend money here, and they want to keep our economy going. But when you penalize them to the point they can't afford to do, they leave, and that's why we will and we must eliminate the estate tax penalty in this state. Beyond tax policy, we have to look at the regulatory environment. Your industry knows it better than most. It takes 4 to 6 times as long in Illinois to site an ethanol or a biodiesel plant. And when that happens, those capital investments, which are limited, go to other states. And when they go to other states get the construction jobs associated with those. Other states receive the permanent jobs associated. And probably most importantly, the value-added nature that those facilities would give to our commodities are lost to other states because we don't have those investments here. A Brady administration will rid the bureaucracy, reduce the regulation, and force the Illinois EPA to work with departments like the Department of Agriculture so that we can be the first choice of investment for those capital projects, adding value to our products and bringing construction jobs to our state. And I can't go without mentioning litigation. The workers' compensation system in this state is broken. you realize, and I do, because I make premium payments to workers' compensation, that in Illinois, the average workers' compensation cost is $2.70 per 100 payroll. In our neighboring state of Indiana, it is less than half at $1.30. Now, why is that? It's because the politicians have failed to ignore the expense and the hardship that it poses on businesses. And as governor of this state, I will reconcile that system to be a win-win system for both the employer and the employee, so businesses can be as competitive as in Illinois as they are in Indiana. You see, that's how we're going to bring jobs back. And jobs bring sustained revenues. Yes, Governor Quinn will tell you that we need to raise your taxes and dig deeper into your pockets, but the fact of the matter is businesses make choices and they leave. The only way to sustainably raise revenues is to bring the 700,000 jobs back to Illinois. The average job brings with it over $4,200 in revenue just to the state, not to mention the wealth and livelihood it creates for an Illinois family. Just last year, the 700,000 jobs cost us over $3 billion in revenue that we could have used to pay down our debt, to reduce property tax burdens, to better fund our schools, to provide a better transportation system. I think that's the better way in this election. But in the meantime, we have to have a governor who has the fiscal discipline to live within our means, much like you have to in your business and I have to in mine. You know, I know how difficult it is. One of our flagship companies, Brady Homes, 4 years ago, built nearly 200 homes with 34 employees. But the times were changing, and we had to change with them or we'd be out of business today. Because we made substantial changes, we're one of the few remaining home builders in the state. But to do it, we had to cut our level of employment down to 9. But with that, we were able to build nearly 100 homes last year. It can be done. You've done it in your business. Most of the businesses of Illinois have done it. Most of the families have done it. I've called for rooting out a dime in every dollar of waste, fraud, corruption, abuse, and mismanagement. It has been done in every area of Illinois' economic segment except the state of Illinois, who has ignored the hardship that government taxes play on creating private sector jobs. The fact of the matter is, it doesn't mean our state's bankrupt, like Governor Quinn says. It means we can still have the resources to invest in our highest priorities, transportation and public safety and education, health care and human services. But we do have to cut spending. I think a great deal of it can be cut by bringing real professionals in to run state government, not canoe czars, not political cronies, but real business professionals who understand how to run a business and the implications of government has on business. And at Brady administration, we'll make sure that we have the finest people running state government, because we have to deal with those precious tax resources that we have as wisely and efficiently and effectively as we can. And in order to solve the state's budget crisis, we cannot ignore the burgeoning pension systems in this state. Yes, I've been criticized by most public service unions because I've said we can no longer afford the rich defined benefit systems that state government has allowed to exist and that governors like Quinn have failed to fund. Now, that doesn't mean I don't want to live up to the obligations, the moral obligations that we have to the people who've paid into the system. I want to live up, but I believe the only way we're going to be able to do that is if we create a new system that's affordable, that's employee-owned, like 401ks, that exist in almost every business in Illinois today. I will lead the charge on saving and protecting the moral obligation we have to the people who've earned their pensions, but we can only do it by leading on changing the system and not ignoring the cost associated with an out-of-date system. We also have to have an eye to the future. The Farm Bureau has been one of the leaders in education. Our educational systems have failed us. With the billions of dollars that we've pumped into the system, they continue to be far too over-reliant on property taxes, and as governor, I will dedicate resources, general revenue growth, into an education property tax relief fund that will reduce the property tax portion that goes to the education fund. I will also create competition for education. One of the biggest failings in our educational system, in my opinion, is that we don't give parents enough choice. We need to create competition. Competition works in the business world, and it can work in the educational environment. What do I mean by that? Charter schools have been one of the most successful tools we have been able to use in some of the most failing school districts. In fact, a student who goes to a charter school in the city of Chicago, neighboring a public school, has a 50% better chance of graduating because we've given parents choice in charter schools. We need to eliminate the cap on charter schools. We need to elevate the tuition tax credit for private schools. And where school districts are failing, we need to give parents the choice of implementing a voucher system so we can bring real competition and real choice. Now, make no mistake, my emphasis here is not to destroy the public school system, to make it better. I believe competition will make Illinois schools the finest not only in this nation, but in this world. But we've got to change the way we've been doing things if we want that. We've argued and discussed far too long about our failing educational systems. It's time to really make an impact and change that. And there's one other thing I'd like to talk to you about before I get to your questions, and that is a clean break from the politics of the past. How many times have we visited another state or someone from another state? When they find out we're from Illinois, they laugh at us. They laugh at us because we are not only the fiscal punching bag in this nation, but we're also the ethical punching bag. Far too many Illinois politicians have been indicted, convicted, and put in jail. But I have to tell you, I think the problem is bigger. Bigger than dozens of corrupt individuals. I think the system's corrupt. And I know this is an issue that you've debated from year to year at your annual meeting that I've been at. But I have to tell you, the people in power are not going to give us back our government. We're going to have to take it back. And to take it back, we've got to go back to a citizen legislature, a democracy. And frankly, that's going to require putting term limits and contribution limits and legislative districts drawn for a community's interest, not the self-serving political fiefdom of the machine politicians. You see, I believe in Illinois. I believe we can be the greatest state in the nation and provide the families of Illinois with the greatest quality of life of any in this world. But to do so, we have to put leaders in place who will put those families' interests in front of the political interest, a clean break from the corruption of the past, revolutionizing our educational system so it works for parents and children, and creating an economic environment that we not only live within our means, but where the private sector can flourish. That's what this election's all about for me. It's whether or not we want to continue to kick the can down the road as we have in the past 8 years, or we want a clean break, a brighter future, some revolutionary ideas that will create the greatest state in the nation. I'm proud to be a citizen of Illinois. I'm proud and thankful that I've had the benefit of growing up in this state. Like you, I just want to give those same opportunities to our children and grandchildren. But to do that, I need your help. I'm not only here to talk to you about my vision for Illinois, but I'm here to ask you to join our campaign. Frankly, this election is not about partisan politics. It's not about Democrats versus Republicans. It's about a vision for the future. And to put that vision in place, I need not just Republicans, but independents and Democrats to join our campaign. So I hope you like what you've heard. I hope you'll visit my website, bradyforillinois.com. I hope you'll give us your input as we move this state forward and this campaign forward. And with your help, I know we can get the job done. Thank you for having me here. God bless you all.
Thanks. Okay, our first question, and you alluded to it in your remarks, but the current business climate in Illinois is not very positive at this time. And we've heard stories within the ag community of just trying to site a business, whether it's an ethanol plant, livestock operation. It takes many more days in this state versus adjoining states. What would you do to build an environment that encourages business to not only relocate in Illinois, but to expand and grow in Illinois?
To me, it's very simple. You've got to be competitive. So most of the success I've had in business comes from ideas I've borrowed from my competitors. So we've got to look at what those other states are doing to streamline the process. I think it's ludicrous that we would charge a higher fee so you could get an expedited permitting process when we should be doing it right in the first place. I've heard these stories far too long, but unfortunately, the Illinois EPA and other bureaucratic organizations within state government has failed to recognize the importance of these capital investments As a businessman, I know how important they are, and I'll make sure we've got the best people running the best systems, like neighboring states of Indiana and others have done. It will be a major focus in my administration because we can no longer afford to see these capital investments go to other states.
Next question, and you alluded to this in your remarks, but how do you plan on addressing the current fiscal crisis in this state? $14 billion deficit. We're looking at the largest unfunded pension program in the country. And what specifically do you plan to propose to address the unpaid bills and the long-term debt?
I've talked about the pension system. It's, as I said, I believe we've got a moral obligation to live up to what's been paid into by the employees of the state. It's frankly not the employees who rely who fail. They put their contribution in. In fact, there's only one budget in the last 8 years that I voted for, and the other seven I primarily didn't vote for because the people in charge weren't willing to discipline themselves to fund the pension systems, which is why our unfunded liabilities in the pension system have doubled in the last 8 years. We've got to handcuff ourselves and pay those obligations. I will not deliver or put a budget in place that doesn't meet those obligations. But again, we have to move into an employee-owned 401k where the employer and the employer are matching. It's fiscally integrity. It can work. It works in the private sector, and it will work in Illinois. Once we do that and we build the mechanism to pay back the unfunded liabilities, and if we do that, we can reduce the unfunded liabilities, we're estimating to nearly $50 billion instead of the $75 that we estimate today because of salary increases and so forth. We can really take that issue off budget and create a solution to it. But in addition to that, I've said I have to cut about $8 billion, no less than a dime in every dollar. Seriously reorganizing the Medicaid system. We have a failed Medicaid system in this state. The Auditor General indicates that there's a number of people who are on it that shouldn't be. We can cut a couple billion dollars out of the Medicaid system. We can cut an additional $5 billion out of general spending in general. A lot of politicians say, oh, well, you can only cut on the general revenue side of the budget half of the $55 billion. The truth of the matter is everything but bond and pension payments can be reexamined and reconstrued. But I've got to cut $8 billion. Governor Christie had to cut $8 billion in a smaller state of New Jersey. He got the job done. It can be done. Our government spending has way outpaced our ability to afford it, and we have to do it. Will there be some serious alterations in areas that we fund? Absolutely. I've said that every major area will at least be reduced by a dime in every dollar, and then we will rebuild that budget based on the highest priorities we have. The reason I've got to cut $8 billion is Governor Quinn tells us he's got a $5 billion structural deficit. I want $1 billion in tax cuts at six. But the backlog of unpaid bills, the $4 to $6 billion that Comptroller Hines says is the worst in the history of this state, has to be repaid. So I have to build revenues in. I'm estimating another $2 billion in cuts so we have the revenues to pay back that backlog of unpaid bills in a very short period of time.
Senator, if you're elected governor, how do you see the role of the Illinois Department of Agriculture in your administration, and what qualities will you be looking for in a director of ag?
Agriculture is the foundation of Illinois' economy. It was the founding foundation, and it continues to be the foundation of our economy. And I think the Department of Agriculture is the impetus for leading in that area. The Director of Agriculture will be a business person, someone who knows how to operate the department as a business, but also understands the business implications that the decisions made within the department have. But it goes beyond the Department of Agriculture. To me, it entails investing in our institutions of higher educations, our colleges and our schools of agriculture, in our programs. I think it's criminal that the CFAR program fell to the budget acts of both Blagojevich and Quinn. I hope to reinstate that as soon as possible so that we can be investing in our agricultural future. Research and development is the future of every industry, and particularly the agricultural industry. So we've got to maintain a focus on what the future holds. For agriculture. The Farm Bureau has been a leading force in this area, as well as the dozens of other agribusiness associations. This administration will listen and recognize the importance of each of those, because at the end of the day, we have to have a strong agricultural economy. That is the base of what we have to offer for the people of this state.
As you know, Senator, livestock is a huge portion of agriculture in this state. What policies would you put in place to encourage a vibrant livestock industry?
You know, I guess what I'm more worried about is over-regulating the industry. I think the livestock industry, and we've all gone through this when we went through past legislation on mega farms. I think we've got some real sensible legislation that's in place. We have to make sure we don't over-regulate it so that we can foster those livestock investments in Illinois, in my mind, are every bit as important as an ethanol plant or a biodiesel plant. So we have to work to foster. And kind of these questions all work around the realm. I told you 37 other states in this nation actually grew jobs last month as opposed to Illinois. The 700,000 jobs and people we estimate we've lost is similar to the number that the state of Texas has gained in the same period of time. When you ask people why they invested in Texas and not in Illinois, it's because, simply put, Texas is a business-friendly state. In all areas, whether it be livestock or ethanol plants or biodiesel plants or regulation and other bureaucracies, Illinois must turn the page and become a business-friendly state to foster these investments for our economic survival.
Actually, along that same line, the Illinois EPA has grown and further tries to put regulations in place that have an impact on all these people here tonight. If you're elected governor, what signal would you send to the new administrator, to Illinois EPA, as it relates to agriculture?
Well, again, that person's going to be a business person, someone who understands the implications of the policies on the businesses that they affect. As far as I know, farmers were the first stewards of our environment. And you continue to care more about the environment and good stewardship than anybody I know. Your heritage is rooted in what you do. We need to listen and be balanced and reasonable in the approach. And the direction I'll take is a balanced and reasonable approach. And I'll make sure that we aren't penalizing or working against the interest of economic interests in all areas, not just agriculture, whether it be coal mines or whether it be other important things to the future of our state's economy.
Senator, are you familiar with the vision for Illinois agriculture? A number of the people here tonight for the last 2 years have been part of this important project as we've looked 5-10 years out to say, where do we want Illinois agriculture to be? How do we grow it? Out of that has come the SMART agenda, where we talk about attracting and retaining the best and the brightest back to agriculture. We talk about business climate issues. Do you endorse that concept of the Vision Project?
I not only endorse it, I compliment you on what you've done. The only question I have, and I've thoroughly read it, you're usually pretty good at coming up with acronyms. I just don't know what SMART stands for. You know, the chief program I'm aware of and all these other things. So does SMART have an acronym that I didn't pick up on?
No.
Okay. Just good. Common sense just means what it says. A good name for your program, and I compliment you on putting it together.
Next question. With the state of Illinois in the state of bankruptcy, why not stop all unfunded mandates?
I think we've got to look at every mandate and question the validity, just as I think we almost have to look at every law and question the continuance of it. Our statute books are far too big and burdensome, and I oftentimes legislators, in fact, I think some of the wisest laws we've ever had have sunset provisions. Mandates ought to have a sunset provision as well. I hope to revolutionize, and I don't know if you're talking about educational mandates specifically. That's generally what we talk about, but I think the State Board of Education has become far too expensive and far too bureaucratic. I intend to dismantle it and create a less bureaucratic, less expensive State Board of Education that will function at the interest of the schools. But I think every mandate needs to be reevaluated, particularly when we're looking at the difficult financial times. You know, Governor Quinn has put a lot of these school districts in a position where they're owed part of the $4 billion, and they're limited in their resources. And we need to give them more freedom and flexibility. But we also have to realize that this one of our greatest strengths as a state is our diversity. And what works for a school in Metropolis, Illinois, may not work in Chicago or Bloomington. And I'm all for empowering local units of government, particularly school boards, parents, teachers, administrators, to use the precious resources they have to meet the highest priorities rather than dictating from Springfield.
Next question deals with Illinois' fee structure, which this question states is much higher than our neighboring states. What would you do as governor to lower those fees and retain or attract small business?
We are, I think I said this in my opening remarks, of the $1 billion in cuts that I think we need to implement immediately, the gas tax, sales tax on gas, the estate tax penalty, the other wheel and cog in that wheel is the fee structure. You know, I think it's $50 to create a corporation or an LLC in Indiana, and it's $250 in Illinois. Now, Hoosiers are smart people, but they can't be that much more efficient than we are when it comes to pushing corporate paper. My position on fees are they ought to pay for the services that we're asking to be provided for that. The problem is Governor Quinn and Governor Blagojevich, and Governor Quinn just again sweeps, I think in a way that's not legal, these fees away, and then they are drained and they need to be replenished. As governor, I'll stop the sweeps. I'll create fee structures that support the function of the fee and reduce, I think we can reduce fees across the board in the state by $200 to $300 million, which puts more money into the pockets of the private sector and I think gives a greater opportunity to grow the private sector, which is what we have to focus on in Illinois.
The next one comes from a school board member out here. As a school board member trying to put a budget together for next year, and the question is, how do we know when or if we will get money to the local school district in trying to deal with the state of Illinois at the local level?
That's one of the biggest problems, as I said earlier, at the Quinn administration. They have overpromised and underdelivered, leaving a bunch of IOUs, not just for schools, but colleges, cities, counties, and other organizations, health and human service providers. I'll craft a budget that will deliver on its promises. I think it's more important that we be realistic with school districts about what we have so they can make the proper adjustments to utilize those resources. They can't do that when we make false promises because they end up in a catastrophic mode like we're finding them today. I started my morning in Chicago, and most of the news was about going back to school and the problems schools are having because Governor Quinn has failed to provide the resources that those schools were promised.
Senator, you have proposed a major change for the Illinois State Board of Education. To what and why?
Well, you know, I've been involved in education and government for a number of years, and I think Harry Truman would have a field day with educational bureaucracy in Illinois. If you think about this, we've got the House, the Senate, the governor, the deputy governor, the State Board of Education, the state superintendent, and the chairman of the State Board of Education, all responsible for K through 12 policy. Now, every time a problem exists, one of those seven entities points the finger at somebody else. I think the governor is the chief elected officer of the state, and with that position has the responsibility to deliver education to the people of Illinois, just as you do the Department of Human Services or DCFS or Department of Agriculture. I think that bureaucracy creates more intrusion into delivering product to our school systems than benefit. So, yes, I've called for the elimination of the State Board as we know it, creating a downsized department under the Office of Governor that would operate on a fraction of the $80 million we spend today. I think that will reduce the regulation and the bureaucracy in local school districts, free them up to do more of what they want to do, and I think put more dollars in the classroom. I also have an agenda to enhance our community colleges. One of the things that I want to do is empower regional offices of education through community colleges to deliver community college curriculum to high schools. This country and this state has a problem as measured by first world nations. We graduate students from high school at an international inferior level when it comes to first world nations. Yet we make it up in the baccalaureate degree. I think one of the most underutilized assets is the community college system. I want to provide the leadership so that the community colleges are providing a curriculum opportunity so that every high school student has the opportunity to leave high school with a two-year associate's degree. Not only does that save money and help advance students, and not necessarily into a baccalaureate program, but maybe into the workforce with a welding degree or something that we need in manufacturing or transportation. But I think it'll advance us. To do that, we need to realign, and I think the changes in the state board will help provide that leadership. I think the regional office of education could be better served by working out of the community college, creating a greater awareness of the opportunities that exist there. So these are some of the programs that fall in line with changing the way we're doing things today.
And the last question, it still goes along the education funding. How do we solve our education funding problem and at the same time remove some of the tax burden from property owners? And you've touched on some of that.
Yeah. What I've committed to is creating the Education Property Tax Relief Fund. The idea is that if we make these changes and we bring the 700,000 jobs back and we grow revenues like we have in the past, $3 billion or so a year, I want to take that percentage of that revenue growth, no less than 10%, put it in the Property Tax Relief Fund, ship it back to the treasurers who will reduce the local property tax portion that goes to education. That fund would build on itself each and every year. It would be built into the budget, so if it was a $2 billion of revenue growth and 10% at a minimum, $200 million would go into that fund. The next year, another two, making it four. The next year, another two, making it six, delivering that back so the state steps up its portion of the educational responsibility to the cost associated with it. That's a good start. I'm not sure that that's a final solution. One of the reasons I take that approach is I firmly believe in local control. And what this does is it allows the maintenance of local control by providing just resources with not an overreaching state government. And that's one of my goals. I do think this needs a lot more examination. My goal is that eventually the state resources would provide at least half of the cost, actual cost of funding, and that may be an agenda item in year two or three to further that. Well, Phil, thank you very much. And thank you all for the opportunity to visit with you on this beautiful night. I truly believe in Illinois, and I truly believe that if we put the right people in place, we elect the right officials, we can turn this state around. It's the greatest turnaround opportunity I think exists. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my vision for Illinois with you. I also want to thank you for your leadership in a whole host of issues. I've enjoyed receiving awards from the Illinois Agricultural Association year in and year out. The leadership that you provide to help bring sanity to the state capital is much needed and will continue to be needed. So as leaders, not only in your community, but within the agriculture community of the state, I say thanks. I look forward to working with you to make this the greatest state in the nation. Thank you and God bless you.
That was Illinois State Senator and Republican candidate for governor Bill Brady at last week's Illinois Agriculture Association's Legislative Forum. Yesterday, we heard from incumbent Pat Quinn. You can listen to each candidate's presentation in its entirety online. Search my name in your iTunes application and sign up for the Closing Market Report podcast. You've been listening to The Farming World. I'm Todd Gleason.